The first case for oral argument this morning would be Chad Carpenter Appellant versus the National Indoor Football League Appellee. For the appellant is Mr. Michael Simpson, an attorney from Rapid City, and for the Appellee National Indoor Football League is Mr. Dennis Finch, an attorney from Rapid City. Mr. Simpson, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel, I am Mike Simpson and I represent Chad Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter was a professional football player who played football for the Rapid City Red Dogs during the 2003 football season. On March 29th, 2003, while playing the league game, he injured himself and made a claim for workers' compensation benefits. The team that he played for, the Red Dogs, did not carry workers' compensation insurance coverage. He, therefore, under South Dakota law, you can file an action in circuit court, in state court, to get workers' compensation benefits if your employer does not have it. And he did that. And he filed that action against the Red Dogs and the National Indoor Football League under a theory of joint employment, that both the league and the team were his employers. The trial court granted summary judgment for the league, finding that they were not a joint employer, and we are here on appeal. The circuit court granted summary judgment, finding that under a contract that Mr. Carpenter had with the league and the club, that he that the contract stated that the team would provide workers' compensation coverage and not the league. And the circuit court found that it was the club's contractual obligation to provide plaintiff with insurance coverage, not the league. And it is our argument on appeal here that there is a specific state statute, 62.318, found in the workers' compensation, Title 62, which states that any obligation created by that title, by Title 62, which basically says that all employers need to provide workers' compensation coverage, shall not be waived by contract. It's very explicit, and obviously the purpose of that law is that so when someone goes in to work for an employer can't hand them a sheet of paper and say, here, sign this sheet of paper, and I won't have to provide you with workers' compensation.
You indicated that the trial court found that there was no coverage and there was no joint employment. But actually, in summary judgment, the trial court cannot make any findings, can it?
That's true.
The facts have to be so settled, and they have to be taken in the light of the of whatever evidence there is in favor of the plaintiff, right, and against the non-moving party.
That's right. And so, I mean, when we're here on appeal, I think that it's pretty well established. We submitted this case on a stipulated record.
Okay. So you jumped over that hurdle, and so the stage at which summary judgment was granted is not crucial because you've stipulated to the facts.
Right. And I think that we both agree that this is a purely legal issue here, whether the league is a joint employer, because really, this is a pretty unusual case. In most cases that I've been handling workers' comp cases for a while, you very rarely see written employment contracts for employees. Usually, it's an implied contract. Someone goes to work, they're paid, they do the work. Maybe there's an employment handbook. In this case, we actually have a four-page, single-spaced, typed contract, which gives the league all sorts of rights and gives the team all sorts of rights, and so I think it's a little unique in that sense.
Now, I believe that the copy of the contract that was supplied indicated that there was no signature by the league's representative.
Right.
Could they be bound by something that did not have their signature on it?
Yes. There's no requirement in an employment contract for less than a year that there be statute of frauds would not apply, so you don't need a written, you don't need a signature by the party being bound. And in an employment contract, South Dakota has the statute, the workers' comp statute, that says, that defines an employee. And it says that an employee shall mean every person in the services of another under any contract of employment, express, which would mean through words or through writing, or implied, which would, and implied means the person goes to work and it's unfair not to pay that person. And so we imply a contract.
So you're claiming there's a written contract with the team and an unwritten contract with the employer?
Well, in a sense, I don't think I need the signature from the league is the answer. And that contract, there's no evidence that the league is repudiating that contract and saying that it doesn't apply in this case. That's the contract under which Chad Carpenter worked.
And there's no argument that he was not a member of the league. Obviously, if he was a member of the team, he automatically was a member of the league.
Right, and he got hurt in the league game that was sanctioned and put on by the league. So I think it's pretty clear we have a contract, and that contract doesn't just say Chad Carpenter plays for the Rapid City Red Dogs. All throughout the contract, littered throughout the contract, are rights that the league has against Chad Carpenter. And if you think about, what makes someone an employer? What makes someone an employer is the ability, usually, to hire and fire, to control someone when you're working for them. If you look at the contract, it states the league can suspend, fine, or terminate the contract for a whole laundry list of activities like gambling or taking steroids or any other form of conduct reasonably judged by the league to be detrimental to the league or club.
But could they hire him to be a... The league couldn't hire him to be a Red Dog player, though.
The league did not hire him. That's true. And this concept of joint employment, there's a whole chapter on it in Larson's workers' comp treatise, and they cite a number of cases. In those cases, oftentimes you'll have a business relationship where you'll have a joint venture, and you'll have one party who does part of the business relationship and another party who does the other part. Oftentimes, one business partner will do the hiring, okay, and maybe will do the general supervision of the employee. The other partner maybe will just do some control to make sure that the employee is doing what he should be doing. So, it's not necessary that you have both parties do the hiring in these cases.
But both parties should have the power to do hiring and firing, shouldn't they?
Well, in the chapter, it talks about control, okay? And it doesn't require that there be total control by both employers. It just requires that there be some degree of control, of joint control. And in this case, like I talked about, the league has the power to fine, suspend, terminate. The league actually has to approve everything that the man wears when he's playing in a football game. His uniform, wristbands, socks, everything has to be league approved because they have contracts with providers who provide that.
So you're trying to, you say that the written agreement, even though it was not signed by the league, is what controls their rights, because there are no other oral agreements or anything that we're dealing with.
That's right.
Are we opening up a can of worms here, though? We just got done with the high school tournaments here. What about a basketball coach contracts with some high school coach? Is he now able to look to the South Dakota High School Activities Association's deep pocket?
I think that's a great question, and that's... No, and the reason is I have to prove, in order to prove joint employment, control, okay? Yeah, there may be some control by the South Dakota High School Activities Association as a coach. They may regulate him in some small way. But I also have to prove that there's a contract, okay, between High School Activity Association and the coach. There is no contract. They're not hiring him, they're not getting any economic benefit from him doing his work. In this case, this is a business. This league is a business. And they have entered into a joint arrangement with this team. They hire the players, and the players put forth their labor. That labor benefits the team and the league. It generates money for them. And that's very distinguishable from a case where you have a licensing or a regulatory body, which would not be considered an employer. It would be considered a licensing body. Okay? So I think that's very distinguishable.
So you really are basing it on this contract. The wording of the contract is either supportive of your particular issue, or I mean, we aren't going to look at the facts of what was going on at the time he was injured. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
And at no time would, I mean, this was a summary judgment, but at no time really what was happening and when he got injured plays in this issue.
That's right. He was playing football, and the whole point of this employment relationship is for him to play football. He gets paid for it. It helps the league. It helps the team to generate income to have a profitable business.
The contract, all contracts require mutuality. Can you point out to me in this contract, other than compensation in playoff games, this was not a playoff game. So other than that provision in paragraph 2, can you point to any other provision in this contract that gives this player any rights against the league?
I can't. In the team participation agreement, which is the contract between the team and the league, and it's in the appendix at, I think it's page 60 to 65, somewhere there. The team and the league are essentially splitting profits to a certain extent through not just playoff games, but league games. And the reason I say that is the league is getting advertising revenue from each and every regular season game. And in their contract, it says the league gets advertising money, you know, for putting signs up at the game and the logos on the field. And so in that sense, the league and the team are splitting profits, and therefore they are jointly hiring this man and all the other football players to help them to make money. And that is the basic...
No, what I ask, though, is when you look at mutuality, that generally means both sides have rights and obligations with respect to the other.
Right.
Other than a playoff game, which this was not, can you point to anything in the contract that gives this player a right against the league? I mean, your brief points out that with respect to like discipline and equipment and all these things, the league has rights against the player. But what about any right that the player has against the league, other than compensation in a postseason game?
Well, I guess the way I would answer that is he has the same rights against the league as he has against the... Well, if he's not paid for the game, he can sue the league or he can sue the team for his money, right? And so he has a right to be paid. But
against the team.
Against the team. But the league and the team.
Not against the league.
But the league and the team are in business together.
But he doesn't have any... That I couldn't see one. Anything in the contract that gave him a right to sue the league for compensation or anything else.
Okay. And I guess, you know, that's the thing I can think about. What did the guy get out of this? He got $200 a game plus expenses. I don't know that he got anything else other than the chance to make, you know, a league beyond this. But under this joint employment test, I have to prove that there's a contract, not an express contract, even an implied contract. So this man gives his labors. He works. He plays football. And it is very inequitable. It would be inequitable to let the league get the benefits of this man's labor and then say there's no contract. where they have to do things such as provide workers' comp coverage, which is what all employers have to do.
I got to ask you, because I think you're sliding back to implied contract now. When you started out saying that you were relying on the written document.
Well,
so which is it going to be?
Well, I'm relying on both. I don't think I have to pick which one, but I think if you look at the contract gives the league all sorts of rights against him, okay? And under South Dakota law, to be an employee, you don't need a written contract. And so what I'm saying is, even if there isn't a written contract per se, then we have an implied contract where it would be unfair not to say that the league is also his employer.
Does mutuality have to be equal in measurement?
No.
I mean, it can be 10 on one person's part and 10 and 1 on the other, can it?
Well, yeah, and I think that's usually the case. It doesn't have to be. Yeah, there always has to be mutuality or really consideration for a contract. That's basic. And my point is that what we have is a joint entity. They're in the business of making money. They're hiring people to help them make money. And we have a contract setting out all sorts of rights and obligations. It is unfair for them to take the benefit of that relationship and then say, we're not an employer. We don't have to provide workers' compensation benefits. And the whole point of this chapter in Larson's and this concept of joint employment is that for workers' comp purposes, they're considered employers. Not for every single purpose under the sun. This is just for workers' compensation. And the reason is because of the remedial purposes of workers' compensation, and that we don't want to have an injured worker left out in the cold. If we have two employers here in a joint venture and one goes belly up, it's not like we picked one employer as the employer. Both of them were employers, and they're jointly and severally liable. That's the whole point of this concept.
How do we get past the paragraph 2, where the contract very specifically says that he's employed by the club, with no mention of the league? I mean, it seems as if this very clearly says who's employing him. How do we get past that?
Well, I think if you read the contract as a whole, it says he is employed by the club, which is a member of the National Indoor Football League. And then the league gives itself all sorts of rights against the players, basically controls them, has the right to control their activities. This contract, it's on National Indoor Football League letterhead. The logos are at the top. It has their address. It has three signature lines for the team, the league, and the player. And it says it's to be executed in triplicate, which would imply that it's supposed to be signed by all three. So what's the intention of this? I would say the intention is to have a contract between
2 minutes.
Three parties.
Was it drawn by the league?
I don't know that that's in the record, but I would say you could, since it's on their letterhead, you could imply that. But I don't think it's in the record, whether it is or not.
And if it were drawn by the league, then you would construe it against the draftsman, wouldn't you?
You would. I think it's a pretty reasonable assumption that Mr. Carpenter didn't draft this and put it on their letterhead. It's an employment contract that's basically a boilerplate contract that was given to all the players. So
there's no special clauses in there for this player?
Not that I could see.
Okay.
I want to come back to this idea of joint employment. This is not a foreign concept to the South Dakota Supreme Court, and there's a case from 1949, the Gulbranson case, where this court adopted the concept of joint employment and said where It was a case where a person had been kind of impressed into service to help a police officer in doing some things and was killed. In that case, the court said there was a question of whether he was working for the county or the city. And the court said because he was advancing the interests of both the county and the city at the time of his death, therefore joint employment would say they're both responsible. And that's this, and that's actually cited in Larson's chapter as one of the main cases. And it's this idea that if you're going to be advancing the interests of two employers, it's fair under for work comp to hold both employers responsible for benefits.
Your time has expired. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Finch, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Hey, police the court, justice, counsel. I'm Dennis Finch from Rapid City, and I represent the National Indoor Football League in this matter. I think we sort of got a boilerplate view or a 101 view of contract law here this morning, but I would submit that this is not really a contract case. I think what the circuit court did here was they looked at the contract to try to determine what evidence there was to support the question or to answer the question of the employer-employee relationship. The threshold issue in any workers' compensation matter is to determine whether there is an employer-employee relationship. And it's kind of almost ironic. When we argued this case in the circuit court, the circuit judge said, well, there's got to be a case out there somewhere that answers this question with all the different leagues there are around the country. Both Mr. Simpson and I looked and looked and looked, and there is no case out there that answers this specific question about whether a league employs an individual player on a club, whether it be the baseball league or the football league.
Do you think the Gulbranson case is relevant?
I'm sorry, Ernie?
Do you think the Gulbranson case is relevant?
I do not, because I don't think this is a joint employment issue. First of all, Gulbranson was a fight over... There was no question that the fellow that was killed was an employee and he was acting within the scope of his employment. But the fight was between the city of a town of Midland and Haakon County as to which one of them was the employer. And the court decided that they were in a dual role because the fellow that hired him was working as a town constable for Midland and as a deputy sheriff for Haakon County. So he was fully employed by both employing entities. He hired Mr. Gulbranson, and so again, the fight was between which one was he employed by, and the court determined that he was employed by both. But the common thread throughout that case and throughout the cases that we have cited to the court is the question of there has to be an employment relationship, and that employment relationship under South Dakota workers' compensation law is determined largely by the control factor. I cited the Agamo case and the Davis case to the court in my brief. And in both of those cases, this court has set forth criteria for what constitutes an employment relationship for purposes of our law. And although appellant has argued in his brief that those cases don't apply because they are cases determining whether someone is an independent contractor or an employee, however, the principle is the same. In order to be an employee, the employer has to have the right to hire and fire, a great degree of control, has to pay the individual, and I think the other factors are set forth in my brief. The furnishing of major items of equipment. Another one, for example, the appellant has argued in his brief that the league requires that certain logos and material be part of the uniform and equipment worn by the football player. However, they did not furnish that equipment. They only required that the logo be on it. The equipment is furnished by the Red Dogs or the employer. The right to terminate at will without liability. Clearly, there are numerous references in this contract that point out the fact that the club is the sole. The word sole is used in there several places with regard to control of certain activities by this individual.
In paragraph 6 of the contract, It looks to me like the league, however, does have control in that they may sell, exchange, assign, or transfer this contract and or league's rights to player services under this contract to any professional football team or league, only in accordance with the procedures set forth in paragraph 13. That seems to be pretty control. You know, that would seem to me to meet the control factor.
That is one of the items that one could argue creates some control. However, it does say, as set forth in paragraph 13, and if you refer to paragraph 13, it says league teams have the discretion to release players from the contract if he has an opportunity with a recognized outdoor professional football league, such as the National Football League, Canadian Football League, etc. So it still refers back to the club having the discretion to release him from his contract. So the contract of employment is between the club and the individual. Now, I submit that Chief Justice Gilbertson's comment about opening a can of worms is clearly what would happen if this case is allowed and granted in favor of the appellant, because this league had nothing to do with hiring Mr. Carpenter. They never had anything to do with his individual performance in games. They did not require a physical, which the club did as part of the agreement. They had no idea even who he was, basically, other than his name appeared on a roster. They did not pay him. They did not withhold anything from his paycheck. They had no control over his pay. It's indeed an unfortunate situation because Mr. Carpenter did get hurt, and he got hurt on the job, and he should have been covered. But his coverage was with the team and not with the league.
Doesn't the league have some responsibility to make sure that workman's comp is in force for the benefit of the players?
You know, I don't know that they do under the law, but the contract does say that the club is responsible for carrying workers' compensation. And there's nothing else in any of the league rules that addresses that issue. That's certainly a legitimate concern. But it still doesn't make the league an employer. And frankly, the record reflects, Mr. Carpenter does have a judgment against the team,
Is the team still an active team?
I don't believe so. The owner of the team at the time of Mr. Carpenter's injury, I believe, basically left town in a hurry and left a lot of people holding the bag, including creditors there as well. That's not part of this record, but I happen to know that.
Does the league have any responsibility to prevent that from happening? I mean, can they get the benefits of this contract and yet just walk away from it like the owner does when everything falls flat?
Well, as a matter of fact, they don't completely benefit from this agreement, and that's a good point, and perhaps they should have some responsibility in that regard, but I don't think the law requires them to, and maybe that's something that's potentially legislative action or something that they should take into consideration for future purposes, but I don't think that changes the law.
Under that contract, say that the league, for whatever reason, decided that Mr. Carpenter wasn't exactly their image of what they wanted to see for a league member, did they have any authority to dismiss him or suspend him or where they could preclude him from playing for the Rapid City Red Dogs?
I don't think so. I don't see where they could.
Well, there was a provision about, what do you call it these days, not politically correct conduct. There was a provision someplace I read in there about...
I said this in my brief to some extent, but I think that's sort of akin to me being an employee of my law firm, and yet I'm controlled to some degree by the rules and the code of professional responsibility. And although I'm not, would ever, never consider myself an employee of this court, you can take my license away if I don't do what I'm supposed to do under the rules. So it's kind of analogous to that in my mind. The league has certain rules that have to be followed, but yet... And if those disciplinary rules get to a certain level, they can step in and take charge and remove this person from his job. But beyond that, I think their control is very limited.
They could fire him in one sense, couldn't they? They could fire him. If he violated a league rule, they could suspend him or prevent him from playing on a league team.
Yes, I think that's accurate, Justice Kornkamp, and that's spelled out in paragraph 14 under league discipline.
Well, does that meet the hire fire test? I think that's maybe an oversimplified way of looking at it, but if they have to approve his being hired by signing on to the contract, and if they have the power to terminate him under certain circumstances, does that meet the test at least one of the elements of being able to hire and fire?
It perhaps meets one of the elements. In the Davis case, when we talk about direct evidence of the right of control, it sort of inches into that part of it. But it doesn't meet any of the other criteria, which this court says need to be considered when you look at whether there's an employer-employee relationship, i.e. the method of payment, the furnishing of major items of equipment, and the right to terminate at will without liability. You can dance back and forth between the contract and what occurred here, but the law is what it is in terms of employer-employee relationship. And while this is indeed, as I said, an unfortunate circumstance, it is just that. The law doesn't always cover every situation. And I think this is perhaps one where there is a bit of a gap, but to stretch it over and make this gentleman an employee of the league will indeed open a can of worms. It would then subject potentially the league to unemployment tax, withholding, and all the other things that go along with that as an employer. And that's not done anywhere, has never been done in this league that I'm aware of. And I think that we're operating on some dangerous ground when we open that door.
Just because it hasn't been done before, isn't really the controlling point either. And since they had so much influence, and maybe you're the major draftsman of this document, didn't they get themselves on this slippery slope by not having a provision in there that says under no circumstances, and the athlete understands and agrees that under no circumstances are they the employer or to be construed as such?
I didn't intend to argue because it's never been done. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be done, but I'm just saying that we're treading on some new ground here. This is a case of first impression in that sense because it's never been done. We've never found a case anywhere else in the country where a league has been determined to be the employer. There is one case that we found at the circuit level. It wasn't cited in either of our briefs, but it was distinguishable because it was a specific case where the league actually got involved in the hiring of the players. That wasn't the case here. The league did not hire.
Is there anything in the relationship and in this contract where there was money paid by the league to this player?
Not that I'm aware of.
And there's nothing in here that...
There's nothing in the record along that line, and I'm not aware if there was any.
Did a portion of his salary go to the league?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Did a portion of his salary go to the league? I'm asking the reverse question she asked.
No. That's really all the arguments I have, Your Honor. I know my time is not up, but I'd be willing to entertain any other questions.
Well, no one's ever chastised for sitting down early.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Finch. Mr. Simpson, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I wanted to address this issue of this. Mr. Finch cites in his brief, and has just mentioned, these independent contractor cases. And those cases are concerned with whether someone's an independent contractor or an employee, which is a whole different question than what we're dealing with here, which is whether we have joint employment. And the reason I say it's different is you can look at the standard that he cites, and it's different than the standard that is contained in Professor Larson's treatise, where he talks about this joint employment test. And so it's my position that since we're talking about joint employment and not an independent contractor issue, that we use that test.
It's clear that the athlete here is an employee and not an independent contractor like in Eggemo versus Flores or whatever,
right.
But which was for the purposes of unemployment compensation, as I recall.
Right.
But
yeah.
Here he's clearly an employee. It's just a question of whether he's a joint, whether he's an employee of the joint employers.
Right. And so I want to clear this up. We keep talking about this hire and fire test. That comes out of the independent contractor cases. In Larson's test for joint employment, it doesn't say you have to have the right, you have to be the hiring party. And like I said earlier, there are all kinds of cases where we have basically business partners. And one business partner takes care of the hiring and maybe the general supervision, and the other one does other things. And even in those cases, as long as we have a contract and as long as we have joint control, then we have joint employment. And that's found in Larson's chapter.
Well, what about this argument about state bar or the licensing of a lawyer, right? That would fit your definition, too. And I think we would all agree that. We wouldn't want to go that far.
Well, we wouldn't, but it doesn't fit the Larson definition. The reason it doesn't fit it is I don't have a contract with the state bar to perform employment for them. The state bar is not sharing in the profits of my law firm. They're not getting the benefits of my labor, so that it would be inequitable for me not to have a contract with them. It's a licensing body. It's set up to protect the public. There's all sorts of licensing bodies that protect the public from all sorts of professions.
Normally with the employee test, though, there has to be some compensation transpires between the employer and the employee.
And that's what I'm saying. Under this test, there doesn't necessarily have to be direct compensation.
Okay.
And there are cases. Because when you think about it, let's say the classic example is one company has a truck, the other company has guys who can drive the truck. The one company leases the truck to the guys who can drive the truck. Who pays the guys who drive the truck? The company that has the guys. The guy who leases the truck doesn't pay. Okay? That's an example of a joint employment case that's given in the text of Larson's chapter. That's joint employment. Why? Because as long as you have a contract where he's working for both people, they're sharing in the profits, it's a joint venture, and both parties have some element of control. Now, with regard to this can of worms, you have to show all three of those things. And in this case, we have. I mean, we've shown control overwhelmingly. There's all kinds of control in this written agreement that you may not have in other types of joint ventures. And we have, you know, just glossing over the whole issue of whether there's a written contract and all that. There's an implied contract here because he did services which benefited the league. And the whole definition of an implied contract is that if somebody does services and that benefits the other person, the court is going to imply that a contract exists. And under South Dakota law, you can have an implied contract for employment. So I think what the circuit court kind of got hung up on is they were looking at who looks most like an employer. And I agree. The team looks more like an employer. They hired him. They pay him. But the question's not black or white. Who's most like an employer? The question is, do both of the employers meet these very basic tests? And if they do, then they're both right. And that makes a lot of sense, and it's consistent with this whole idea of workers' compensation that we're going to cover as many people as possible because it's remedial legislation. And we don't want injured workers holding the bag when their employers can't get their act together and can't figure out that they're going to buy workers' comp coverage. So I think I'll sit down early, too.
You will not be chastised either.
One question.
Yes.
They say there was an old law school professor who, when he was presented with an argument like you made principally in your opening argument about fairness and so forth, he would send a student out to look at the front of the building, and he said, "Now, what did that say?" And he says, "It says School of Law." And I'm just wondering if you're trying to change this change the name of the building into the School of Justice or the School of Equity or the School of Fairness?
I'm not. And the reason is that there's a state statute that says all employers will have the responsibility to pay for workers' comp coverage. And my position is, legally, when the league got the benefit of this man's labor, they became an employer under this legal test that the court's already accepted in the Goldman's case. And yes, it makes a lot of sense, and yes, it's fair, but it's also very firmly grounded in the law.
Thank you, Mr. Simpson.